Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello, welcome once again. This is Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And we are so glad you have joined the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Thank you so much for downloading, listening to this episode, and joining in the conversation. Remember, you can hit us up on Twitter at 10K Movies, T-E-N-K Movies, or Brian's blog where he reviews the films he's seen, 10K, T-E-N-K Movies.com. In this week's episode, we start talking about genres. What makes a genre? What makes a genre connect with us more than another kind of genre? In this week's top five, what are the genres that we are suckers for? This topic will be the first in a series as we talk about different genres, and we hope that this first conversation about just the general idea of genre will catapult us into some interesting conversations in the future as well. But before we get to that big topic, Brian, tell us once again where you are on your list and the movie that you maybe have seen most recently.
Okay, I'm at 7,166.
We are coming to you after having missed our latest episode. That is my fault. I was sick the last time Brian and I were supposed to record, and so we just ended up missing our deadline date to get a new episode to you. Our apologies, but that means that Brian is a little bit further along, perhaps, than he would have been otherwise on this episode number. And what was the 7,166th movie?
It's a movie in its 20th anniversary year. It's a movie that that stars has some big names in it, From Dusk Till Dawn.
Now, this is what's always interesting to me about this quest. You are so far into
the movie that you've seen
that I'm just always surprised and startled when there's a film that you've just seen that I saw like
20 years ago,
however many years ago.
Yeah.
That was. So
well, there's always,
it's really interesting to me when it's a movie I've actually heard of, let alone seen at this juncture.
Yeah, there's always a lot of movies that for whatever reason, they slip through your radar at the time. And I would venture to say that now definitely post 2010 and probably getting close to post 2000, I've seen most of the movies that I want to see that came out during that time frame, and probably more than I really wanted to see. But when you start going back before then, and have seen 60 movies from that year, 70 movies from that year, which is a large number, but it pales in comparison to the 220 I saw from 2015 or something like that. So there's going to be a lot more gaps in those.
So From Dusk Till Dawn, does that fit more into the movies that you wanted to see, or movies that maybe you saw but you don't really have to
see? I will say I enjoyed it. I went into it, I don't know what my expectations were, but it was not, I won't say it met them, I'd say it was not what I expected. It's a weird movie. And it's more of like an experiment really in style than it is a movie, because it's like they're throwing different ideas out there and they're just going left. You almost get the sense that Quentin Tarantino's character dies about the 2/3 of the way through. And you get the sense that he was heavily involved in the first 2/3 that he was in. And then he took a big hands off for the last third.
Yeah, as a creative influence. I was going to ask, the movie stars George Clooney kind of on his ascendancy to big time Hollywood movie star. Quentin Tarantino, too, the big thing Quentin had done, I think, at that point was Pulp Fiction, which I think creatively is still his best effort. But Not perhaps the most commercially successful of some of the films he's done.
Well, he
who wrote and directed that film?
Robert Rodriguez, the same guy that did Spy Kids, and then later the Machete movies.
Which also had a Clinton influence. That's part of the Grindhouse.
I mean, they're very close friends. And there's another one, maybe that's in that group that's very close-knit community. But Rodriguez, you know, you can tell the first part because, you know, Juliet Lewis is in it, Harvey Keitel, a lot of Quentin regulars. But the first part feels like, it kind of feels like a kind of a mix mash between Natural Born Killers and True Romance. It feels like it would fit in those. It would fit right alongside those two films fine. Then the last third introduces a supernatural element that you just do not see coming, and it is totally Robert Rodriguez. You can just tell it is all him.
Right.
And it's just such a bizarre, weird tonal shift.
Even though I'd seen this movie, here's the two things I remember most from it. One is George Clooney has a righteous tattoo over half his body.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other part is, spoiler alert, the closing scene after they've defeated the vampires from Dusk Till Dawn, you know, kind of lets you know it's perhaps going to be a vampire movie. Although, the supernatural element comes kind of late.
Way late.
And a little bit out of left field as far as the story was progressing. But the closing scene is actually, I remember it being kind of powerful. And they're driving away, and it's this club they've been at. And it kind of, the camera peels back and it shows this huge Aztec temple. Mm-hmm. So it's a closing shot that definitely sticks with you.
Well,
it's also a film that seems to connect well to our topic for the day too, Brian. You were mentioning that in reflecting on the movie before we started recording, that it seems like From Dusk Till Dawn belongs to a lot of different genres. Could you expound a little bit more on that thought?
Yeah, it's like you're throwing, you know, you can't decide if it wants to be a kind of a Pulp Fiction-esque or like I said, True Romance, sort of like semi-heist film, you know, gangster kind of film, low-level gangster film, or if it wants to be a supernatural film, or there are religious elements that kind of get underdeveloped. Because Harvey Keitel is a former minister who has fallen away from the church and after his wife died. So it becomes, you know, and it touches on that, but then it quickly like, let's move over here because we got, you know, vampires we need to explore. So
this raises, again, the question of genre. And I don't think what you're saying necessarily, one of the flaws perhaps from Dusk Till Dawn, it's not so much that it has a multitude of themes or different elements, but it can't really decide what it is and then kind of build off from that a little bit. Is that kind of accurate?
Yes. I think a lot of movies, they straddle lines, but you have to know what you are at your core, at your center.
So when we're talking genre, then a good definition perhaps is, would it be something like that in your mind? Would it be, you know, at the core, if you had to give kind of an elevator pitch of this movie, you would describe it in these terms. Is that fair?
Yeah. What are you going to say? Because genre is so much about who your intended audience is, you know, and if you don't know what you're going for there, then the movie's going to get lost. It's going to get muddled. Yeah. And this movie did, there was a period of time when this movie got lost. Now, I liked it, but it's almost like it's two completely different movies that have a bridge that just sort of joins together these two that really don't have any business being together.
Right.
It's almost like Grindhouse 1.
Yeah. So you'd say, though, you still enjoyed From Dusk Till Dawn. It's somewhere in the middle. Of your big ranking system, but moving on from that and thinking more about genre, what do you think? What are the positives of genre, and what are maybe some of the limitations when we start talking about movies, just in terms of that one specific genre they may belong to?
Well, okay, if you making a movie, you're consciously making a movie as part of a genre of films, one of the benefits of that is you can pull from what has gone before in this, you know, long line of films. So you have a history of films to pull from. You know, if you're making a gangster movie, it's unfathomable that you won't have some sort of either subtle or overt reference to The Godfather, to Goodfellas, to Scarface. You know, you've got all these films that you can play off of, or you can take a scene that you know your audience will be somewhat familiar with and twist it and say, well, let's do it a little bit differently over here. Now, you don't want to have a movie. Now, Tarantino, this is what he wound up doing in Pulp Fiction in a lot of ways, is he wound up taking that to the extreme where his whole movie was just recitations of scenes from other movies, you know. but you can do that, but for the most part, you don't want to be that. All that adds a flavor. It puts your movie in a conversation or part of a line. It gives it a history.
What would you say in the movies, the 7,166 movies you've seen? What genres to you seem to be one? Maybe the oldest, and then two, to you, are the ones that seem to recur with the most frequency.
Well, you know, the one of the ones that romantic films have always been, you know, always been movies that have, and war films have been big from the very beginning. Just about, you know, I think some of the earliest films were either Civil War or, you know, because Civil War at that point was 50 years earlier or less, you know, fairly closer than we are to World War II. So they, you know, they had, you know, still heavily on their minds. You look back at Shakespeare, I mean, those were the stories he was telling. He was telling war stories. He was telling romantic stories, histories, you know, and those are the three things that people relate to. You don't have to have a lot of backstory to understand these people are coming to attack me. I need to defend myself. Boom. You know, it's pretty easy to set that up. And everybody at some level has had some sort of romantic feelings for someone. So that's pretty easy to connect.
So the accessibility of it, obviously.
Yeah, they're pretty universal. And they don't necessarily even require, you know, like I can watch a war film that's a Japanese or a Chinese film. And even if I didn't have any subtitles, I would have a basic understanding of what was going on just because I understand the language of what fighting and war is. The same thing for romantic movies to a lesser extent.
Well, in that case then, what do you think genres are a little bit more niche that you've discovered kind of on there? It's taken you a little bit longer to connect with them than perhaps some others.
Well, you know, really dark satire can be really hard to connect to. You know, the masters of the genre, you'll find pretty easily. But I think those are a lot less accessible to people is when it's really, really dark satire or political satire can be very difficult. But for the most part, you know, most genres are pretty, you know, some you like more than others, but most of them are pretty easy to understand.
What's been a new genre that you've discovered on this quest that, you know, if not doing this, you wouldn't have developed an appreciation for? It doesn't mean it's, you know, a beloved one for you by any means, but you have a better understanding and more of an affinity for it than you did before you started tracking your movies. And
yeah, I mean, I'm starting, you know, watching more foreign films, you start to get a feel for some genres that haven't really translated over to American film. More, and some of those are intergenerational type things. There's one German film series, and you can make the case that it's a mini series like on TV versus a movie, but it depends on how you. But you know, that just tracks a whole family history more or less. You know, from right before the Second World War to the 90s, and that kind of stuff hasn't really. We don't have a lot of that in American film. Now, occasionally we do, but even American TV shows don't try to do anything that ambitious.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say, maybe as a way to, I don't know, some closing thoughts on this conversation? We've talked about kind of just the reality of genre and why it's there, and perhaps What it helps us for is to provide a very easily accessible framework for us to engage with the stories the film's telling. But what are some of the inherent also limitations or challenges of genre, do you think?
Well, you have to be, it requires a discipline. And, it, you know, people say, I just want to make a movie. But if you, you know, you say, I want to make a gangster film again, or a Western or something like that, you know, you have to be disciplined and say, this other idea, while great, won't fit in this genre. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing
Is that another way of saying that it limits innovation in some way?
In some ways. I mean, you can always be trying to incorporate different ideas, but you have to be, you know, you can't go off script too much, because then you lose the core of what your film is. You know, if you have a Western, if your movie's a Western, and then halfway through you go off and you have this long, you know, romantic subplot that kind of takes over the movie, then you're not going to, going to be difficult to, and, you know, it can be like Cowboys and Aliens. Some genres don't play well together, you know?
There you go. Yeah, no, that's true. It also strikes me that the innovation in the genre, if you take something like the horror genre and Scream, Scream at the time, incredibly innovative, but it's almost, you know, one of the realities maybe of just genre is that over time that the innovators kind of become then kind of the new norm for that genre. So it's almost like genre resets itself. And I don't know if it's a limitation, or maybe it's the challenge, maybe it's the promise of a genre.
Yeah.
There's a sense where that idea that it resets itself maybe also challenges filmmakers to have to try to innovate.
Yes. Post Scream, you saw, and you still see, a glut of stuff that is about precocious, hyper-aware teenagers in situations that, you know, where they constantly call back to movies they've seen to explain.
Which transcends the horror genre. I mean, you're talking about something that's true for a number of films. I think
it pretty much started, if not with Scream. Scream is when it like rose to this new levels of, because you could argue that's what Ferris Bueller is really. But Scream took off. And part of that was the guy that wrote Scream also did Dawson's Creek. And they were, you know, a lot of those things sort of, you know, dovetailed.
Well, I think one thing we can do as we talk about a series on genre, as we focus maybe on some particular genres that have been popular or that we think deserve some more lengthy discussion. I think we can talk too about how innovations have or maybe haven't worked in that field in those particular genres. But I think now it's probably time to move to our top five and share what are the genres that kind of have resonated with you most over this quest for 10,000. I'm going to chime in also with my thoughts on genres. And let's maybe give genre plus a film that maybe is emblematic, that kind of jumps readily to mind when you think of that particular genre.
Well, one genre that, you know, has always been a mainstay for me since I was a child almost, and this is, you know, the sci-fi comedy genre. And that is, it's always.
So that would be number five for you, sci-fi comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so give us an example.
Well, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, classic, you know, films that are just feel like comfortable worn shoes at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the movie I'm going to go to if I need to feel good.
Which, given our age, too, another genre that people might say those belong to is just simply the 1980s filmmaking. So that's kind of an interesting subplot and all that, too. For me, probably number five would be sports films. Just any kind of sports film, I'm probably going to check you out if that's what you're selling to me. So, you can think of anything. Any Given Sunday is one that they had me at the any part once they started showing being thrown around.
Fight for that inch.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. So what about the fourth genre, fourth top genre for you?
You know, I could say sports films, but I'm gonna narrow it and say any film, because it doesn't necessarily have to be about sport, but any film that it is about a group of prohibitive underdogs that find a way to come out on top. You know, I know that it's improbable and that the majority of real life situations are going to wind up with the underdogs failing miserably because, I mean, they're set up to fail. But the movies just, they make you, you walk out of the movie and you just feel like just inspired, just like just this is, you know, I can do this, you know, and you just get that feeling that you can't, you know, that's why we watch movies, is we want to taste that feeling.
So that's interesting. That ties in maybe to my number four. You're painting with maybe a broader brush of genre than I am. I'm almost going to say, for me, just because it's one of the most standard romantic comedies, probably fourth for me. But I sense even in a lot of romantic comedies I like, again, it's a little bit of that underdog story, except with a romantic overlay to it. But uh-huh. It shares something in common with that genre that you're talking about, and also something distinct maybe from a film like a Hoosiers or a Bad News Bears or The Great Debaters. Uh-huh. You know, some of the, you know, but Notting Hill, Hugh Grant definitely sort of an underdog trying to get the Hollywood starlet to love him. So what about number three for you?
Well, number three, we talked about it a little bit, but con movies, any movie that has any sort of a long setup and just, you know, you're trying to con someone. The Sting obviously is the preeminent example, but the Ocean's movies are the same way, love them or hate them. They have, you know, they're just clever. And it's just this, I love, you know, any movie where a character can conceivably say, I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
And that is, we've talked about this on this podcast before, that is my number one genre right there is the con movie. It can be a crappy con movie, but if it shows up on my Netflix, is recommended, it's going into my queue and, I'm going to watch it and probably enjoy a certain portion of it, especially when they explain.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know people that hate it, but I love Matchstick Men.
Oh, yeah.
I like Now You Can See Me. Like, I know, I realize the movie had huge flaws to it or whatever, but what it got right, it got right.
Got right. That's
and
right.
You combine magic and cons. Come on, people. Like,
your number three is my number one, and if you average them together, you get two. So what is your number two?
The movies, it's a special genre film, but particularly it seems to be focused on father-son relationships. But any movie that's about how a parent realizes the important thing in life is their kids. Yeah. I'm thinking Hook. I'm thinking Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, Robin Williams, apparently. But I'm thinking, you know, there's a whole genre of movie. You can even argue Field of Dreams is this movie that is like this, you know, a father and son or somehow a family connection forming despite difficulties. I love those movies.
Yeah, that's kind of my number two. I might broaden a little bit to say, you know, it's any of those movies, and you see a preponderance of these also, I think, on Netflix right now. These movies where you have this kind of solitary, isolated figure whose world gets turned upside down by the presence of a child, whether it's their own child, they kind of come into some kind of new understanding or relationship with, or a movie that we've talked about recently, St. Vincent with the great Bill Murray. One of my favorite Bill Murray films now. I agree with you. That kind of, that dynamic of the father-son, presence of a child to kind of show you what's important.
Well, and what's the thing about those movies is, especially, you've got to have, if the child actor is not right on target, movie falls apart.
True.
Doesn't matter what is going on, how good the script, whatever's going on, you got to get, and that can be so difficult to do.
It is tough to pull off, a high wire act for sure. Okay, so here we come. Number one for you, Brian, in terms of genre.
You know, those movies that are, we talked in our pre-talk discussion, I'm going to broaden it from what I said originally, but existential movies that are like big picture, like who am I, what am I doing? Because I want to include movies like The Truman Show in this sort of, you know, exploring who you are and what your purpose is on this planet. And specifically, you know, the ones that I was originally going to say and I'm most attracted to are ones that tend to be older people who are sort of taking stock of who they are and where they've been. And I'm thinking of Venus with Peter O'Toole, or the movie from the 70s with Art Carney. And the name's escaping me, but he won an Oscar for it. So I'm thinking of movies like that. Ingmar Bergman made a ton of Swedish films that were explored this category. But that's the kind of movie that just really just hits me home, you know.
Yeah. And those films, I don't know where they would fit maybe in my ranking, but yeah, those are the films. It's kind of the coming to terms ... with whatever. Well, maybe some subplots. Maybe sometimes it is with your family relationship. So it's, again, it's that kind of that gruff figure fills out what's really important in life is relationships, and a kid leads into it. Yeah. Or maybe it's something like a sci-fi comedy.
You find out what that one thing is.
Or maybe it's something like a sci-fi comedy, like Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Great movie.
With Steve Carell, where, again, they're kind of, it's both romantic, it's kind of romantic comedy, it's sci-fi, but it's also kind of coming to terms with what's really interesting. So I'm excited about this ongoing conversation coming up about genres, and look forward to looking at different elements of different genres. I think with it being October, probably the next genre we should look at, Brian, is horror. I think the time our next episode release will be pretty close to Halloween. So horror will be a genre I'd be most interested in hearing your take on.
Yeah.
Listeners, please tell us what you think about genre and what you think it adds to movies, what sometimes it might take away from movies if we pigeonhole them too much with the question of genre. And tell us what genres you like the most and what you might like to hear us talk about and share about. You can do that again on Twitter at 10kmovies and Brian's blog where he reviews films, 10kmovies.com. Thank you so much again for listening and joining us on this part of Brian's journey. And until next time, we hope that your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.